plant redwoods, said the architect of his most spectacular design. Instead of ensuring his place in prosperity, instead of making sure that his own egocentric deathlessness in marble and tile would continue on, he said to plant redwoods all around his masterpiece. And he told the people of his beloved city that the best thing they could do as a spiritual practice was to watch that palace crumble underneath the tree's ever-reaching arms. Watch the water run through the walls. Watch the open air claim the sanctuaries. Watch the illusion of unchanging things fade away under the beauty of impermanence itself. Let it go, willed the artist. And as it goes, let all of us watch and see and not mourn its loss, but praise its slowly creeping transformation into something new. Sounds very poetic, doesn't it? And yet few challenges that we might put before ourselves as spiritual beings are harder than this one. To let go rather than to hang on. And even in the greatest challenge of all, to love the tragic and beautiful circumstances of our own ever-present transformation from whatever it is we are now to whatever it is we are becoming. We live in this culture that challenges us to make our mark, right? To leave an impression so that the world will always know that we were here. It's the one way that we seem to know to deal with the great and terrifying truth that even the longest summer day is short and that every life, even the brightest, and the most youthful is rapidly hurtling toward the mystery that lies at its end. We are, of course, people who can't help but be aware on some level of our eventual demise. We are people who are in the meantime so painfully aware of our tenuous brevity that we can't stop pondering it. We are aware of that other supposed demon which we invariably fight, our limitations. We walk around in our minds knowing that the journey will not take us onward forever in the same direction. But we also walk around without that reality often permeating from our heads to our souls. We walk around thinking it, but never quite feeling it, never knowing if that painful and beautiful truth can live at a deeper level than just a bizarre abstraction. But there are times when life meets us head on with the reality of death. There are times when life meets us head on with the truth of our limitations and we can't run away. Many of us are here standing at just a couple of weeks removed from the unexpected death of our friend and fellow brewer, Jeff Pitts. He was so young. He was so hopeful. He was a longtime companion on many of our journeys. And in times like this, when the inconceivable happens, when it just doesn't make sense, at times like this, the reality of our tenuous existence really starts to sink in. It goes through our brains and down to our souls. It's times like this when we don't just imagine our impermanence, we know it. We feel it. And when we really feel it, a great many of us are left with only a few options for putting that impermanence into a framework that makes sense. You know the options, right? We can posit a grandly constructed afterlife with wine and roses for the taking. Or maybe there's just fear of the chasm. Or maybe what meets us is just nothing at all but a long emptiness that we feel might be pressing in. The commonality of those three options is the simple truth that all three presume the end is somehow final, an end that never cycles back upon itself, never returns again to its origins, but only proceeds in a straight line from here to there, from the known to the imagined, from life to, what, something? And almost always that something is a something we are taught either to fear or to ignore. Our brevity on this earth is our dirty little secret. Until, of course, it escapes its carefully wrought chains and presents itself in full view here before us, with the death of a friend, the passing of another sunset, the turning once again of the tides. And we find ourselves, or those we love, all of us, in the position of that man in the Buddhist folktale, right? We find ourselves chased by a lion, running to preserve all that we know, and flinging ourselves over an unknown chasm, caught only by a tenuous vine. We find ourselves looking below to see another tiger, to see that mice are chewing away at our precious lifeline. And there is little doubt in this story as to this man's fate or ours. It is the fate of us all. It's an end. It's always an end, no matter what, even when it is a beginning. The end is, for many, presumably final. It awaits this man in either direction, and we know just exactly what it is. And yet, it isn't exactly the ending that matters in this story, is it? It's the moments between the inevitabilities that matter. In this case, it's the moment that the man sees a bright, beautiful fruit, a fruit he never would have found clinging to the safety of a sheltered path, a berry that only grows on a cliffside. He plucks it and he eats it and he finds it to be so good as to be unspeakable, bursting with such joy that there are not words to capture it. And the story tells us, in that brief moment, something that Eastern cultures have known forever, that contemporary Western culture has often fought to ignore, the truth that it is only in the presence of the inevitable that such sublime pleasure as that could be known. It is only in the presence of that supposedly horrible chasm below that the grace and beauty of one living moment can be fully realized. There were 1,000, 1,000,000 strawberries before that one, but none is sweet, because in that moment, the man did what we are all called to do. He knew the great and tremendous gift that comes along with impermanence. And what happens to the man is the same thing that can happen to each of us. He had an awareness of impermanence from which he could not turn. And what did he experience? Beauty, almost unimaginable. A beauty formed by our very limitedness. That can be known only by such blessedly finite creatures as ourselves. And what a blessing it is. What a blessing it is, this life, so that angels might fall from heaven just for a taste of this that we have here together. There's a story that has haunted me for years. It's a story about these two lovers who were never supposed to be together. He was an 11th century French scholar and a monk, and she was this wealthy student who was in his charge. Their names were Abelard and Heloise, and as with most tragic love stories, they were in the end torn apart, and it was horrible and dramatic. But there was one moment in their romance where this couple had agreed to meet up at a prearranged spot, and Abelard got there first. Waiting at the end of the path, he saw her coming from a distance, the object of his adoration and devotion coming toward him underneath the stars. The moment was so pure and so real and the inevitability of its end so apparent, history tells us it moved him to poetry, and what he said when he saw her was this: For this the gods deny us immortality. For this abundant beauty, for the grace that lasts but a moment, all the gods in heaven tremble lightly in their immortal lopers from envy. For this, for one taste of a bright and brief berry, for one lover coming down the path, for a day at the beach and a morning at church, for this, the gods look down and eat their hearts out, wishing for such magnificence. And who are we to spend our days brooding about the end of the story when it always ends the same? Who are we to spend our time fearing the inevitable when right now, in this moment, the whole point of things, the very marrow of life, spins over and around us, inviting us to break through our fear and into our sense of wonder that this, all of it, is ours for the taking. And the only thing we have to give up in exchange for it is the shallow comfort of unchanging timelessness. Who are we to fear the end, when we are called simply to taste the journey through and through, to look down at the gaping jaws below us and laugh? For we have pulled off the greatest trick of all: to live while we know we are dying, and to know it for the very miracle that makes us human. It was Wallace Stevens who wrote that death is the mother of beauty. It was his impending death that turned the dying John Keats into the greatest living poet of his day. For with knowing eyes, he could see the world in bolder relief, brighter colors, and the poet's pen danced in the context of his own mortality. What is beauty but brevity? Captured and honored and named. I've never been much for places that don't have real seasons. Never felt compelled to live in a place like California where it's always 78 and sunny. Because here, when the leaves turn into flame in October, the brief interval of life is played out before us over and over again each year, reminding us of the vastness of which our beginnings and our endings are all a part. I love to watch the single tree outside my office as it plays out the perpetual cycle of birth, pink life, bursting joy, drying retreat, and snowy, sparkling rest before it all begins again. It is this cycle, not just of nature, but of life, that the Reverend Dr. Forrest Church says turns us as if by magic from being just human to being fully humane. Himself diagnosed with terminal cancer last year, Dr. Church wrote about this transformation in his upcoming book, and in it he says, the word human has a telling etymology. Human, humane, humility, humus. Dust to dust. The mortality binds us fast to one another, and all true meaning is shared meaning. He goes on to say that, I've often said that I didn't become a minister until I performed my first funeral. When death or dying comes knocking at the door like a bracing wind, it clears the air of pettiness. It connects us to others. More alert to life's fragility, we reawaken life's preciousness. To be fully human is to care. And attending to death prompts the most eloquent form of caring imaginable. At every deathbed, the light that shines is framed by darkness. And when those we love die, a part of us dies with them. When those we love are sick, we too feel the pain. Yet all of this is worth it, especially the pain. Because grief and death are sacraments, or at least they can be. A sacrament symbolizes communion, the act of bringing us together. And to comfort one another is to bring our strength. To console one another is to be with one's loved one in his aloneness. To commiserate with her is to share her pain. I think what Dr. Church is getting at is the fact that the very finitude we fear is what makes human life as grand and glorious a miracle as it has always been. It is our impermanence that allows us to let go and move with the currents of the moment, the transitory nature of things that calls us to see how now, right now, how much grace can be packed into a flower, or one friend, or one afternoon. Our friend Jeff Pitts, before he died, knew that. His Buddhist practice taught him the beauty of his own impermanence. And while his end may have been frightening, we will never know. His understanding of its necessity and the long shadow of beauty that it cast back upon his life is not frightening in the least. Suspended between two infinities, we dangle in this bright finitude, encompassed by a beauty that can only be known by we limited ones, we flawed ones, we who alone are capable of tasting the sweet fruit as it passes us by forever. And yet so much of our energy still goes into the fight to secure our legacies, to beat back the inevitable, to protect our fears of the great unknown as if they are precious jewels. And yet we focus so much on the inevitable end of the story instead of its rich and varied telling. What if the end doesn't matter anyhow? What if our legacy is found in our ability or lack thereof to live well and fully within the narrow boundaries of our existence? What if our legacy is nothing more or less than our lives in these brief days that encompass it? There's a Buddhist saying which tells us one way we might think of life. It says, "Thus shall you think of all this fleeting world, a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering light, an illusion, a dream. Thus shall you think of these days, but a brief and beautiful interval, a line cast over the chasm which brings before us beauty no safe eternity could ever muster. Impermanence, friends, is not simply tragic. It is the beauty in which we move. It is the ever-present turning and the constant call to live these days with all the fullness we can muster. And so in this briefest of seasons, with the high summer days stretching out before us, knowing that they must end, let us go forward from this place, ready and willing to soak up grace from every corner of this limited vastness, willing to taste each berry as if it were our last, able to comprehend even for a moment that that which we fear is also our greatest gift to all of it, to everything that passes us by, to life. Let us toast every single day in breakable glasses. For this is the story, and the ending, which is, after all, our greatest gift, will surely take care of itself. May it be so, and amen.